The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
All right, everybody. It is our third and final hour together today on this Wednesday, the 10th of April, midweek. Here on 660 AM, The Answer. Hope your day is going great. Be careful. There's some showers and stuff, and it's all going to clear out the rest of the week. And the weekend look fantastic. Day in the 60s. It's about this temperature, and it kind of stays there. So whatever you're up to, I hope it's all filled with blessings and good things. We have a really interesting opportunity to take a look at the ViaScan of Las Colinas text line and your calls, as this has really caught fire. That we have for decades as a society seen when kids commit crimes and said, well, where were the parents? We always ask, where were the parents? Was there insufficient monitoring and surveillance and insufficient parenting? And so often that question is yes. So what changed yesterday in a Michigan courtroom is that this got criminalized. This mom and this dad, they're getting locked up for 10 to 15 years for giving their kid access to a gun, failing to recognize all kinds of screaming warning signs from this kid, including being at school. They called him into school on the morning of the shooting and said, yeah, we think this kid's really messed up and you might want to get him some mental health attention, please, because he's drawing guns and the feelings won't stop. And, you know, my life has no meaning. It's just textbook troubled, deeply, possibly violently troubled kid. And they basically said, we're good. We got to go to work. And they did. And they went to work. And the school didn't throw the kid out on the street because he's 15. So he went and got his gun, shot up school that afternoon, killed four people. He will be in jail for the rest of his life, properly so. Mom and dad are going to cool their heels for the next 10 to 15. Is that proper? It's a couple of offshoots of this before we hop back to your calls. 866-660-5759. I can't help. I think I'm good with this. This is a real thinking cap moment for me. It's like, okay, I do get it. The message is, do you think sometimes things like this happen as a message? I mean, I'm all about, you know, what a deterrent value. But sometimes you think about judges who seek to, you know, the saying goes, they're going to make an example of them. Are they making an example of the crumblies by saying, look, if we slam the door on them for a decade and a half, maybe that next parent with that next disturbed kid might actually do something. And do we save lives that way? Is that a justification? I think it probably is. And yet, I just know there's going to be some future case that's not quite as cut and dried as this. And look, maybe if it's not as cut and dried as this, you just don't convict the parents because there just wasn't, beyond reasonable doubt that they were guilty. In this particular case, though, again, it's not aiding and abetting. It's not even criminal negligence. They got them for manslaughter. Like they did something. This was a sin of omission rather than commission. Right, where the bad thing is because of something you did not do rather than something you did. And failure to do something can be that can be an offense too. Didn't take my kid out of the car. It was 112 degrees and I went into Home Depot for an hour. That's a sin of omission. That's criminal negligence. All right. So your thoughts on all this are welcome. 866-660-5759. I mentioned we had somebody on the text line earlier who said, what if I fail to take the car keys from my mom and she's 85 and she, hits a kid in a crosswalk. Is that my fault too? Somebody else writes, perfect storm. Mentally ill teenager, criminally negligent parents, and moronic school officials. Oh, goodness gracious me. All right. All right. 866-660-5759. We are in Kaufman. Ray, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Mark. How are you doing today?
I am good. Thank you.
I'm having a wonderful day. It comes to my attention that the left has been pushing an agenda on us lately. It takes a village to raise a child. And right. If, in fact, it does take a village to raise a child, why not throw the whole village
in jail? We need to build a new jail for the 50,000 residents of Oakland, Michigan. Yeah, because this village did not raise this kid.
It doesn't seem like anybody raised this kid, or the whole village raised the kid wrong.
Well, I tell you, it is very opportune that you mention that, Ray, and thank you. Is everybody old enough to remember the It Takes a Village movement or trend or fad? Is it a good thing to have a neighborhood filled with caring people? Did I have up and down Tamworth Court in Camp Springs, Maryland, where there are a bunch of houses that I could walk into and find, not surrogate parents, but other grown-ups who cared greatly for me and my friends? And was that, of course. But the problem with It Takes a Village to Raise a Child was it seemed to distract from the central truth, and that is that mom and dad need to be raising kids, that ultimately it falls on the shoulders of mom and dad. That's where the responsibility lies. And I got to tell you, that I think that's what resonates in this. It's your kid. It ain't the village's kid. It ain't the school's kid. It is your kid. School called the parents. School called the Crumbleys in and said, you want to take a look at this math quiz where your kid like drew a gun and bullets and blood references? And you might get this kid an appointment somewhere, please? And I've got to go to work. That afternoon, he shoots up school. I think every time I tell that story, this sentence seems a little more justified to me. I don't know if it's having that effect on you. 866-660-5759. Paul, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey. Mark, this goes in stages with children and parents. It starts with maybe being truant. And I know that the JP courts are the ones, those judges, handle truancy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can take those parents in truancy cases and fine them and throw them in jail if they don't take care and get that kid to school.
Yep.
And as this grows, maybe it goes to other courts. How about that kid that is always the bully and beating up on kids? And the parent goes, I just don't know what to do. Well, we're taking you to jail for a week.
Yeah. Maybe you'll figure something out in 30 days.
Exactly. And so that's where I'm seeing that this can be a deterrent.
Yeah.
But I think we need to look at some of these beatings these junior high kids are doing in school.
Yeah. Another layer extends from this issue. Paul, thank you. And I've often thought about that. I can't remember the last time we did a big old bullying talk show. Maybe it's time for one, because is it getting better because I just don't hear about it as much? Are schools getting hipper to this? Where the schools used to be just totally hands-off. Hey, boys will be boys. Yeah, but your boy put my boy's head in the toilet for 30 seconds. That's not boys will be boys. That's boys will be little monsters, and maybe they need a little foot up the butt at home in order to maybe take care of that a little bit. Huh? School's getting better on that? I'd like to think so. 866-660-5759. We are in Allen. Brian, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mark. Hey. You know what I like about your show is that you go into these things, and not only do you have an open mind, but you also have that detector when you're saying, as much as this sounds right, there's something that still bothers me about this.
Yeah, that's the case here. It's not always, but on this one, I confess that it is.
And a rhetorical question, what did you get on your parenting class grades? What were your wife's grades when you took those parenting classes? I didn't have to take any.
Well, I was going to say, is this a pointed question? Because my friend, we didn't take any parenting classes.
So anyway, I watched a lot of this trial, and I got this, like you said, a radar thing where I felt like something was being curated. And then this big old moment opened up where it was like the end of the Indiana Jones thing where they show the box being put into this thing.
Wow.
Well, the assistant principal basically was talking about what she did and what her victim statement was, in a sense. She walked directly up to this child after he had already been shooting, all right? After she saw the blood, after she saw the person on, she confronted him directly, not to try and take the gun away or anything, but because she was so certain that the only problem he had was self-harm. And this is what had been basically covered a little bit, just a tiny bit during the trial, is that the parents were trying to make this child happier because they were worried that he was actually in the possibility of self-harm. And the gun was something that he had been working towards trying to earn that would possibly make him happy.
Yeah, great. Yeah, if you've got a horribly depressed kid, listen, I'm all about firearms and young people, but if you've got a horribly depressed kid, maybe the Sig Sauer 9mm is not your best first option.
Of course, of course. But then again, remember where they are. They're in Michigan. This is hunting country.
Well, I'm in Texas, and I got that clarity.
So these parents, as much as you can snapshot and show all these bad things, right? Again, they had the child right there. This person who had confronted this child many times, who had counseled him, who had been providing this information to the parents that the child was just depressed. That he was, you know, there was maybe some chemical imbalance, that he was very, very depressed, may harm himself. If you kept hearing that about your child, would you be worrying that he was going to shoot everyone up? Or would you be worried that you would find him in a pool of his own blood?
This is a spectacular question. And it's funny. And once again, God bless cameras in the courtroom. Looks like you paid attention to some actual trial coverage. And on that day, when he had those drawings on the math worksheet, the phrase blood everywhere, my life is useless, drawings of a gun and a bullet. That seems to be more of an I'm going to kill myself than I'm going to kill four of my classmates.
Exactly. And this is exactly what the assistant principal said when she approached him. She wasn't afraid. She wasn't thinking that he was going to shoot her. She was afraid that he would kill himself. But, of course, that belies the fact that there's these bodies laying around.
Yeah, I was going to say, he apparently changed his mind. So I need to scoot, but do me a favor. So how does this all, with all that we've just talked about, deeply appreciate all the perspectives, how does it make you feel about the 10 to 15 years for the mom and dad?
The judge said no reasonable person would believe that these parents did the right thing and that they should have clearly seen that he was going to be a school shooter killer, and yet this vice principal who saw him all of this time walked directly up to him. Was she not reasonable? Was she insane to do this?
Yeah, she wasn't. Okay, Brian, spectacular points. Thank you. So even, I guess if the options are the kid's going to kill himself or he's going to kill others, either way, it cries out for intervention. It cries out for institutionalization. Something cries out for mental health professional help. Either way. All right, it's 9:22. More of you next. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. All right, 9:28, 866-660-5759. It is a Wednesday, and on the ViaScan of Las Colinas text line, there should have been a elapsed time clock on when somebody would bring this up, because this is just, in fact, perhaps I should have. Somebody makes the point that we're telling parents that they absolutely must get completely involved in any, you know, the kid looks at somebody sideways or, you know, draws something weird one day, the parents are suddenly on the hook for responsibility for anything that kid does. But parents are not allowed to be concerned when their kid wants to transition. Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much. All righty, we are in Arlington. Larry, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
You know, I'm not going to make this political, but I am going to use political terms. So when parents raise their children conservatively or parents raise their children liberally. A liberal parent raising wants to be the child's friend. I want to be your friend. You know what? I'm a conservative. I can be friendly, but I'm not your friend. I'm your dad. So when people detach a bit and they don't get involved, so I would really kind of like to look back and say, out of all these school shootings and all these children that have gone off the chain and done whatever, how many of those parents raised them conservatively and how many of them raised them liberally? Because when I look back, it's a bunch of detached, I want to be your friend, have all your friends over, yeah, I'll look the other way if you're drinking, maybe. You know, but it's more of a I want to be your friend thing, not your parent thing, because when I grew up, I would have got my backside beaten sideways, and I turned out okay.
Yeah.
Village to raise the child. You need a parent. You don't need a village.
And it didn't used to. It's kind of funny. Good job not getting political, because we wouldn't want to do that. No, it didn't used to be political. You used to go to a neighborhood, find a bunch of conservative parents, a bunch of liberal parents, but they all held the kids accountable. Now it's like, oh, I want to be his buddy, or I don't want to, you know, I want to make sure that the world revolves around him. And listen, not that there aren't conservative parents who do that, and not that there aren't liberal parents who are wrong about every issue, but, you know, doing a good job raising the kids. But generally speaking, I think your somewhat broad brush has some accuracy to it, that there is a portion of leftism that has said that discipline is bad, expectations are bad, accountability is bad. And when you believe those things, then the results can be bad. Larry, thank you. Appreciate it very much. More of you next on these and other issues. I still got other couple of things to bring up and try to shoehorn into the show in the final half hour. Let's see if I succeed. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 931. Back to your calls momentarily. Nikki Whaley is in the newsroom. From Queen, A Day at the Races. Little Brian May composition. The Long Away. Tiny home stretch, everybody. Wake up in the morning with a good face. 866-660-5759. To the phones. Let's down. I want to say Jack County. Let's head down. Bryson, Charlie. Hey, Mark Davis. Welcome. How are you, sir?
Hey, my brother. How are you this morning?
I am good.
I tell on your screener, Mark, that this has been when my boys were in school, probably closer to 22 years ago. Him and his buddy were out marvin hunting the night before. He put the gun behind the seat in his pickup, forgot about it, went to school, and every so often, the deputy sheriff would come by with the dogs, you know, checking drugs or whatever. Mm-hmm. Identified his truck. Took it, you know, said, hey, we've got this. They call me, and the principal was there. And the principal said, well, you can take the firearm down to your grandmother. She lived about 3 or 4 blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mark. And give her the gun, come back. They notified me. He said, he's brought his, you know, and he said, what we're going to do is his punishment is going to be that he has to write a 500-word essay why I can't bring my gun to school.
The writing of the essay, the best.
And because, you know, like I said, it's a very rural county. And for him to have to sit down and write a 500-word essay was better than probably putting him in jail.
Oh, that's awesome. I used to love the essays. Please let me write an essay. Are you kidding me? I'll spit out 500 words on anything. Oh, that's awesome, man. Thank you very much, Charlie. But there's a continuum. So right now, if there's like a spent shell in your kid's pickup because you and he went hunting over the weekend, it's like a SWAT team response. Then you go back far enough and you got to write a 500-word essay on why you really don't need to be bringing the gun to school. If you go back far enough, there's a gun on the gun rack of every truck in the school parking lot. And it was a better America. All righty, we are in Sherman. Phyllis, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Just fine. Good morning.
Hi.
I just wanted to point out if there's a situation where a kid is having gender dysphoria issues.
Yep.
And either a teacher or a school counselor or people at school are helping that child toward the transition decisions,
mm-hmm.
maybe surgically, mm-hmm. Sexual organ mutilation of some kind. I believe that screams for parental intervention.
Of course it does. And yet in America 2024, if you got a 10-year-old who goes into the school counselor and there's a boy who says, I think I'm a girl, like, shh, close the door. First of all, there's a small reveal ceremony where there's a popping of champagne corks and confetti. We got another one. And I don't mean to be glib about this, but the other thing that happens is they circle the wagons and they wonder if maybe they need to be telling the parents. Wonder if they need to be telling the parents? The parent who steps in and says, my kid needs deep counseling, deep prayer, deep mental health assistance because he believes something that is a factual untruth. All of a sudden, the parents who believe that are the problem. We're fighting back, Phyllis, and we're fighting back, and I believe we're winning battles. Got to win the war because this nonsense must stop. Thank you, Phyllis. Appreciate it. You know, I've done a whole show and have scarcely done gender stuff. I think Dawn Staley did us a favor the other day. Coach of the South Carolina Gamecocks, the undefeated women's national championship South Carolina Gamecocks, when a reporter asked her, yeah, what do you think about dudes on the court with women's basketball? And she said, well, you know, if you think you're a woman, seems like you ought to be able to play. You know she doesn't believe that. Either she does and she's an idiot, which I don't think I want to believe, or she doesn't believe it and she was just really scared of the mob because the mob would have come for her. Because women's ball, all of colleges and much of athletics, and especially women's college ball, is a really deeply liberal atmosphere. It's a pretty LGBTQ-friendly atmosphere. Yeah, gee, I wonder why, because a ton of the players are L. You get my drift? Yeah, but this is one of those cases where out of that alphabet soup, the L's and the G's are not always on board with the T's. Dave Chappelle had an interesting riff on that a couple of specials back. He said, you know, I mean, the lesbians and the gays, they've got, I mean, their point is their orientation and who they wish to align with relationship-wise, but they know what they are. Find me 100 gay people and say, listen, can a man become a woman? And your basic answer is going to be no. So anyway, though, I think there's been, anytime something like this can happen and the country convulses and goes, what? It's a good day. It's just a really, really, really good day. And it's the kind of thing with the hard work of people like Riley Gaines and other heroes, people who are from the front lines of women's athletics. You just can't have people in women's athletics who are willing to oversee the destruction of women's athletics. People are sneezing at the ratings number real quick. I saw that an article about this. Women's college championship, Iowa, South Carolina, Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes lost to undefeated South Carolina. 18 million viewers, more than the World Series, more than the NBA Finals. Then the men's championship was played the other night. Did you notice? That was the running joke is, oh, the men are playing too? Yeah, that was Connecticut and Purdue, and I got 14 million. Women's championship game got more viewers than the men, and some people have sneezed at that. I'm not. This is the power of Caitlin Clark, and, I mean, that's not just her, but most of it's her, and an undefeated team, and listen, the men's championship would have had more viewers if NC State had been able to beat Purdue. Because if you have a Cinderella in there in the North Carolina State Wolfpack, with that big, wonderful dude, DJ Burns, you would have had more viewers. I don't know if you had 4 million more, but nonetheless, let's not split hairs. I think this is a valid ratings win. Now, it's, I don't want to say a never again thing, but it's a one-year thing. This is completely Caitlin Clark related. And I'll flat tell you, the WNBA draft is a few days from now, right? And she's apparently going to be taken by a franchise called the Indiana Fever. When they roll into town to play your Dallas Wings, that could be a hard sellout. It's because she's a historically significant, singularly talented player. That's what drove this. And that's very, very real. But she's also very, very gone. Now, will some people, will they have watched this and have some residual appreciation for the women's game and start watching it more next year? Absolutely. But will the women's game have ratings even close to the men's championship or final? No. No. And that's not to speak disparagingly. Just a marketplace truth. The Caitlin Clark thing is what drove this. Let me just, the last thing, the only final thing I had to do on this whole parents getting locked up for their kids shooting on the school thing was the end of the appearance by Parkland school shooting judge Elizabeth Scherer, who's now a lawyer in private practice and commentator, on with Jesse Waters last night, talking about how, that of course, there are Second Amendment rights, obviously, but also responsibility.
And these people and all parents owe it to the community to exercise those responsibilities with those rights. I think they go hand in hand.
Yeah, you don't buy your 15-year-old son with no friends wearing weird clothing, writing in mental health journals about sadistic, sick, twisted fantasies, a handgun, and then not keep it locked up.
Correct. That's it. All right. Let's do a lightning round through stuff I brought up and we've just scarcely been able to get to. Teresa Woodard last night about the possible return of the Aggie Bonfire.
One of Texas's greatest traditions became one of its greatest tragedies. And in the immediate aftermath in 1999...
It's just a tradition that should not stop because of one tragedy.
Survivors like him and students like her...
I think it's too big of a deal to get rid of.
...could not imagine Aggie Bonfire ending. But 12 Aggies died, so Bonfire has not burned on the Aggie campus since.
I was always for Bonfire as a great tradition at Texas A&M. But I was always against a fatally defective bonfire, and I still am.
Fort Worth attorney Daryl Keith represented victims and families in lawsuits that lasted 14 years. I spoke with him after obtaining a copy of a letter sent to those families from a member of the Texas A&M Board of Regents asking how they'd feel about bringing Bonfire back.
Mm. My clients had mixed views and feelings in that regard.
For the last 12 years, the letter says, students have built an unsanctioned bonfire off campus, a very real safety concern. With the legendary Aggie-Longhorn rivalry resuming this fall, a university committee is weighing what traditions to renew. The regent who wrote the letter did not respond to my call or text asking for more information, but his letter says moving the off-campus bonfire back to campus with professional oversight is possible.
I sign me up for wanting it. And I, oh man, are we going to give these families veto power over this? I guess, I mean, I don't know. My heart bleeds for them. This comes up every once in a while where you have an aggrieved party or parties and we care about them and our hearts bleed for them and we pray for them and we grieve with them and we care about them and we hold them up, et cetera. But do we give them veto power over what could well be a consensus great idea?
I am hopeful that the A&M family will embrace safety as a primary goal to this great tradition and return it to A&M.
Keith is not opposed, as long as students are protected and the memories of victims are too.
Yeah, okay. All right. And all right, speaking of tragedies, Biden, Hugh Hewitt opened this morning with Biden on just more throwing of Israel under the bus. It is just now epidemic level anti-Israel pronouncements from this White House. And it's because they know that they're losing the Hamas wing of the Democrat Party. In the Republican Party, Speaker Mike Johnson, and who I like, I'm prepared to, I was prepared to invest in emotionally. I still am. I like the guy a lot. But is he working behind the scenes to wiggle through some deal with Biden for Ukraine aid? Bree Jackson, NBC.
Speaker Mike Johnson is pushing to reach a compromise for aid for Ukraine, despite facing calls from within his own party to oust him over it.
U.S. aid for two foreign countries fighting separate wars remains in limbo. Lawmakers from both parties are pushing to approve urgent funding for Ukraine.
I think that we have to look at the situation in Ukraine and treat it as the emergency that it is.
Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina, and no, it's not.
We have got to accept responsibility by holding back our equipment and support for their effort. We put them in a terrible situation. They're being outgunned 5-1 with artillery shells.
Dick Durbin of Illinois.
And we're directly responsible for that.
We are responsible. We are responsible. So it's, speaking of deflected responsibility, where's Exhibit A?
But Congress is divided over a path forward for Israel. President Biden issued his strongest criticism of Israel since the war there began after its deadly strike killed seven humanitarian aid workers.
The president caved further to domestic political pressure. He indulged his radical base and called for an immediate ceasefire.
Sometimes even Mitch McConnell is right in identifying this as exactly what it is. It's not about global interest. It's not about the strategy of the war. It's not about, you know, the moral clarity of wanting Israel to finish this war and finish Hamas. It's about protecting the Democrat base, much of which is Hamas friendly. 9:51. I know you got Go Your Own Way and various other huge hits from Rumors. But Lindsey Buckingham picking and a singing on Never Going Back Again burned into my brain for a few decades. So we'll let them take us out. For producer Ron DeKay Moreland, technical guru skills from Mr. Matt, news excellence from Nikki Whaley, we thank you for listening. God bless our country, our troops, our families. Stay safe today. Got some showers. Then things are going to clear out. And we'll get together for the Thursday program today. See what's going on in the news that we need to talk about tomorrow. Great to be with you. I'm Mark Davis. Follow me on the old X Twitter at Mark Davis. And we'll see you in the morning right here on 660 AM. The Answer.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.